the next poor sap is me. Thadwick's eyes lit up with a spark of hope as his gaze on Jason's familiar body grew intent.
You can get me out, Thadwick said. I can help you. I've seen things. I know things, things that can help you.
You're probably right, Jason said. But I can't help you. This familiar's body can't break you out or get you over the wall. I can't even offer to put you out of your misery before the Builder takes you. All this body can do is drain mana.
You could come yourself, with your team. The things I know are worth the risk.
I'm not going to walk my team blind into a fortified position full of powerful enemies, Jason said. If nothing else, I don't trust you. We could easily find the bad guys waiting for us because you warned them in hope of a reprieve.
I wouldn't do that.
Yes, Thadwick, you would. If anything, it would be more of a surprise if you didn't betray us.
I could start yelling, you know, Thadwick said. Let everyone know that you're here in the camp.
They already know, Jason said. Oddly, they've been waiting for us to finish our conversation. I guess whatever they did to you dulled your senses. Or perhaps it's just the old Thadwick obliviousness. You never did pay much attention to anything that wasn't yourself.
I'm looking forward to hearing about your death, Thadwick said.
Even if it comes, Thadwick, you won't be the one hearing about it. Very soon, someone else is going to be in possession of your ears. Thadwick's face paled at the thought. He bowed his head, looking down instead of at Jason.
How is my family?
Thadwick asked softly. Your betrayal wasn't exactly good for them, Jason said. It would have been worse if your mother hadn't picked up the city like a rug and shaken most of the cultists out. She was trying to rescue you before everyone realized you went willingly. She was still trying after, for that matter. She took longer than the rest to believe it, though, your mum. I'm pretty sure she still thinks it was some implanted impulse that made you go back.
Maybe it was,
Thadwick said to the floor, his voice beaten and hollow.
It was the power. I could feel it in the memories from the first time I had the seed. I still don't really remember the first time. You don't keep control if they have to force it on you. I only had flashes, but I remembered the feeling of power. That was clear, the power I'd always been promised, but never seemed to receive.
He looked up, staring at Jason through Shade's body.
That was the lie, wasn't it? The lure.
Yes, Jason said softly.
Please, Thadwick begged. Please get me out of here.
I'm sorry, Thadwick. Strangely, I really am. But you've dug a hole so deep that all you can do is wait for the sides to fall in. Anyone who jumps in will just get buried along with you.
Please!
The familiar body moved out of the cage and stood upright. Goodbye, Thadwick. The next time I see you, I don't think it will be you in there. Shade walked out into the open, not bothering to hide, as behind him Thadwick started screaming his name, cursing him to the heavens. Zato waited nearby, cultists from around the camp looking over. You're the leader? Jason asked.
Zato, he introduced himself.
Jason Asano, thank you for being patient.
We have both treated Thadwick poorly. Not undeservedly, but he still came to Builder willingly. In the end, I will not begrudge him a last conversation with the closest he can get to a friend, even if it is an enemy.
I'm not sure if that was a kindness or not, Jason said. Zato looked in the direction of the cage, where Thadwick was still screaming.
Would you be willing to move to a more discreet location to talk?
Certainly, Jason said. Zato led Jason across the camp, in the direction of the few small buildings that were truly well constructed. There were cultists and constructs all over. Purity clergy as well, although Jason didn't spot Hendren or Anissa. He quietly hoped he knew exactly where they were. Did the Builder knock these ones out personally? Jason asked, gesturing to the better-made buildings they were headed towards.
He did, Zato said. I'm taking you to our command residence.
Command residence, Jason said. I like that. It has a feel of dignity. I'd like to thank you for the civil welcome. Thadwick's an old, well, not friend, but I can at least tell his mother that he had someone to talk to at the end.
We can hardly bring any harm to your familiar's projected body, so why be barbarians about it? There's nothing in the camp we need to hide from you. All you will find here is that you do not have the strength or the numbers to handle us.
It is intimidating, Jason agreed, eyeing a large construct. It was similar to a beetle, with a hard body and six legs. The rather confronting difference was the neck, which was long, flexible, and segmented, ending in what looked like a rhino's head, but with a bladed fin instead of a horn. Jason could feel the faint aura of the construct, which was silver rank.
Is that a construct version of a real creature?
Construct cores are variations on monster cores, Zato said. They create more powerful versions of ordinary monsters.
Zato led them to what looked like a stone cottage and went inside, holding the door for Jason to follow. Inside was a surprisingly comfortable sitting room, replete with armchairs, a couch, and a nice rug on the floor.
Not your cloud house, I'm sure, Zato said, but not bad in a pinch. Please, sit.
Not much point, Jason said. My familiar is intangible, so I'd have to fake it. It's very nice, though. It could maybe use some houseplants.
The Lord Builder doesn't care for them.
It's his house, I guess.
Yes, it is, the Builder said, walking into the room. He emitted no trace of aura that Jason could sense.
Jason looked at the Builder. He was wearing plain robes with the hood pushed back, revealing a cadaverous face. Even so, it seemed familiar.
Who's the poor bloke you're inside now? Jason asked.
He looks kind of familiar, but I can't place it. Probably because it looks like you're going Weekend at Bernie's on the poor guy.
Weekend at Bernie's? Zato asked. I'm not sure I follow.
Asano likes to make references people from this world will not understand, the Builder said. The purpose is to put them off balance.
Pay it no mind.
You took possession of my brain for a little while, Jason said. It makes sense that you know all my tricks. You and the Goddess of Knowledge should get together and play Mario Kart.
Do gods and great astral beings socialize?
I suppose you must, since purity seems to fit neatly into your pocket.
He also likes to talk continuously, derailing the conversation, the Builder said. He moves it into his own pace that he might control it. The inside of his mind is an interminable place.
Don't go spilling all the beans, Jason said. Forget about my head, though. What about this guy you're inside of right now?
This vessel has encountered you before, the Builder said, while he was a servant at the Vane Estate. He captured you. Twice.
Wait, he's the shovel guy? Jason asked.
What was his name? I want to say Dougie?
Dougal, the Builder said.
No, I'm pretty sure it was Dougie.
It was Dougal.
You might want to have another rummage around that head, mate. The bloke should know his own name.
You are attempting to aggravate me, the Builder said.
Mate, I'm doing that just by walking around. I'm a living monument to your failure. Why would I bother to try and tick you off even more?
Because you find it fun.
Jason laughed. You really were inside my head, weren't you?
And now you are inside one of the Reaper's brood, the Builder said. Why would one of the Reaper's shadows stoop to involving itself in mortal affairs? An oddly hypocritical criticism coming from you, Shade said. I was ever my own being and am free to do as I wish. You should have chosen a better summoner, the Builder said. This one will be dead soon.
Perhaps, Shade said.
He's died before.
You seem confident, Jason said to the Builder. You think I can't beat you?
We have the numbers and we have the power, the Builder said. Overcoming us is impossible for you. So is kicking your interdimensional ass out of my body, yet here we are, Jason said. I've beaten you before, and I'll beat you again. I did say I'd have pants next time, but my legs aren't here, so this doesn't count.
The reason I invited you, Zato interjected, was to discuss the possibility of mutually acceptable resolution.
Zato had stepped back on the arrival of the builder, but stepped forward when proceedings continued to remain contentious.
You want a truce?
Jason asked.
No one doubts that you can cause us some trouble, Zato said. It is equally evident, however, that you cannot ultimately stop us. Therefore, we suggest a compromise.
You can't seriously think we'd go for that, Jason asked.
This astral space, as I'm sure you're aware, Zato said, is quite unusual. The connection it has to the larger world is artificially supported. That means we don't need to destructively rip it away, as we have with other astral spaces. The controlled unraveling of the astral bindings will let it drift away without causing any harm.
So, Jason said, what you're proposing is that we just let you have this one?
In return, we shall open a portal back to the world. We get the astral space, you and your team get out alive, and we can go right back to fighting over the next thing. We can even throw in Thadwick, if you want him.
He's not much of a sweetener, Jason said. I can't make that decision. I'll have to consult with my team.
Of course, Zato said.
Just so you know, Jason said, I'll be voting to turn you down, and I do have my persuasive moments.
I would also like for you to decline, the builder said. I would rather put you to death here, but Zato has convinced me of the merits of this proposal.
He does seem pretty on top of things, Jason said. Not what I look for in an enemy, to be honest. I actually kind of like him. I don't suppose you want to join Team Hopelessly Outmatched, Zato?
No, thank you.
I don't blame you, mate.
Is Zato your first or last name? It's my only name.
Oh, a mononym, Jason said brightly. Like, sure. Have your boss tell you about the music video for If I Could Turn Back Time? That could be a good look for you. Bold, but I think you could swing it.
Jason looked at the builder's expression.
Ooh, I think he's getting grouchy, Jason said. I'd best make myself scarce before he changes his mind on the whole deal.
Best that you do, the builder warned.
I'm just going to have Shade dissolve his body here, Jason said. Wouldn't want you following me home.
Please give my proposal consideration, Mr. Asano, Zato said. I would rather come out of this with a respected enemy than a vanquished foe.
Shade's body faded into nothingness.
Do you think he believed me?
Zato asked.
No, the builder said. But it doesn't matter. Our people are almost upon them.
Jason opened his eyes and turned to Shade.
How long? Jason asked.
They are less than 2 minutes out. Shade had two of his bodies stationed between their location and the builder camp. Jason tossed his aura sensors over the dummy auras Clive had set up. They were subtle and impressively close to the originals. Given that the enemies hadn't sensed their current auras, they should be completely indistinguishable from the reality. Jason started running. He had been looking and speaking through Shade from the bottom of a large intact building, exactly the kind of building that would make a good encampment. He extricated himself from the building and looked up, spotting one of Shade's bodies on the roof of the adjacent building. He quickly teleported through a chain of Shade's bodies to where the team was waiting on a rooftop, several buildings away. That brought him to inside an aura suppression ritual circle Clive had set up.
Well? Neil asked.
Yeah. Jason said.
Clive was right. The builder was able to track me through the link to Shade's body. The contingent was a mix of clergy and cultist, made up of the fastest moving people they'd been able to muster. They poured into the building, eager to find and cut down Asano before he fled, hopefully catching the rest of his team in the process. They arrived in the bowels of the building, pulling up short when they reached the complex ritual circle that was the source of the auras they had locked onto.
"What is this?" a priestess demanded.
Timos, the leader of the cultist's contingent, went wide-eyed.
"We need to get out."
Even as he yelled, their magical sensors picked up previously dormant power coming to life around the building. The team reached the adjacent rooftop just in time to see the end of the building's collapse. They were swamped by a dust cloud, Sophie's aura once again keeping the team's air clear. They dropped down to ground level. Jason shared his slow fall power with Belinda and Neil. With Sophie's aura continuously clearing the air around them, they went to check on the unstable rubble.
"That's it, isn't it?" Belinda asked. "That has to have killed them, right?"
"Depends on who they sent," Humphrey said. They were only just beginning their examination when they heard the rubble shifting in the cloud of dust ahead of them. Slowly, something pushed its way up and out, broken chunks of masonry tumbling away as it rose up from the debris. Through the haze, they saw a dome of magical force ascend from the shattered remnants of the building. Inside were three figures, who spotted them in turn. Jason had never seen Timos before and didn't recognize him. The other two, he did. Anissa and her Archbishop, Nicholas Hendren. Chapter 58. The True Danger. Archbishop Hendren had put his barrier up in time to completely shield the three, who were barely even dirty after having had a building dropped on them. The dome flickered out of existence. Anyone with magic senses could detect that huge amounts of mana had been poured into it. This was of limited help to the team, as one of the many problems in facing a silver ranker was that they had no shortage of mana to spend. Anissa's aura, like Sophie's, cleared the air around her, the Archbishop and Timos. As they stepped forward and the two auras overlapped, suddenly the air between them was cleared.
"Clever," Hendren said, "luring us into a trap. We were rushing to catch you before you left the area, and weren't as cautious as we should have been."
"You didn't have to survive to tell us that," Jason said.
"Your immediate death would have been compliment enough."
"Cleverness will only get you so far," Hendren said. "It will always falter in the face of true power."
"That's just what clever people have tricked you into thinking," Jason said. "Because they're, you know, clever."
"Don't spare him words," Anissa said. "He deserves only death."
"Anissa, if deserve had anything to do with what we get in life," Jason said, "a meteor would have landed on your head years ago. You've had it out for me from the day we met, and I'm thinking it's time you and I put this thing to bed, one way or another. You and me, purification versus affliction. Are you willing to pit the power of your god against the darkness in the heart of man?" "The man being me. Or the darkness is me? I shouldn't have used a metaphor. Me stab stab, you heal heal. What do you say?"
"I will take pleasure in shutting that mouth for good," she said.
Jason leapt forward, Anissa's gaze focused on him as orbs of light manifested around her body. Then, beside her, Hendren called out a warning.
"Behind you!"
Hendren's silver rank sensors had noticed the approach of Stash in the form of a rodent climbing over the rubble. Even as Hendren yelled, Stash was taking the form of one of the monsters they had encountered during their time in the astral space. His new form had the body of a rhino and the legs of a mountain goat, but no neck or head at all. The front of his body was taken up entirely by a mouth ringed with teeth, with a pair of barbed, prehensile tongues. Monster Stash lunged at Anissa, but Hendren shoved her out of the way, stepping into the space she occupied. Despite his being much smaller and lighter than Stash's monstrous form, Stash was sent tumbling away with a loud, slapping backhand. Anissa, meanwhile, had tumbled herself from where Hendren had shoved her out of the path. Sprawled on the uneven rubble, she looked up at the enemy to find not Jason, but Humphrey, propelled through the air with the power of a special attack.
The rapid-fire sequence of events happened over just a moment. It was a testament to the team's relentless practice. Week after week, day after day, and hour after hour of fighting monsters together had turned them into a well-oiled machine. The improvised tactic had begun with Jason calling out Anissa. The team knew he was a poor matchup for the Purity Priestess, and his call for a singular confrontation was a signal to do the exact opposite. If he was drawing attention to himself instead of vanishing to seek out opportunities, it meant he was looking to create a distraction. While he was normally the dagger in the dark, Jason also liked to play waving right hand as the left hand struck. The left hand, in this case, was Humphrey. Humphrey directed Stash through their familiar bond, knowing that he would be detected and the Silver Ranker would be quick enough to react, but had little time to make that reaction very effective. Even if the Archbishop had a quick shield power like Neil's, Humphrey was betting on an instinctive reaction to push Anissa out of the way. Humphrey bet on that and was already moving, lunging for the spot he expected the priestess to be, rather than where she was at the moment he launched his special attack. Ability, flying leap, wing, special attack, combination, movement, cost, low stamina, cooldown, 10 seconds, current rank, bronze, 4, 19%. Effect, iron. Swift and powerful leap with some limited air control that can be combined with normal or special melee attacks. Physical damage from these attacks is increased. Effect, bronze. All damage from melee special attacks combined with this ability is increased, regardless of damage type. Humphrey grew larger as he sailed through the air, courtesy of Neil's giant's might spell. He also brought his heavy sword down in an overhead smash as he leapt, his most powerful, unstoppable force attack. Enhanced by the leaping power, it fell on Anissa like divine judgment. Neil, lightning quick with his spells, managed a second spell before the attack landed, using bolster to further enhance the attack. Anissa quickly threw up a shield, even as her three orbs moved to intercept Humphrey's sword. There was a sound like shattering glass as they crumpled, one after another. With the triple enhancement of Neil's spells and Humphrey's combined special attacks, the unstoppable force power lived up to its name. Bronze and silver ranks represented very different stages of advancement for an essence user. Silver was like a whole new world, where what was a danger to ordinary people were no longer a factor. Bronze rank was the first step beyond normal, mortal potential, but only a small one. Only at silver rank would Anissa have been able to survive having Humphrey's sword bury itself in her body. Anissa had been something of a perfect weapon against Jason's powers, with abilities to inhibit his death by a thousand cuts style, both in protecting herself and cleansing afflictions. Jason had guessed as much long ago, which is why he had immediately signaled for his team to make the move. Humphrey was the opposite of what she was best at, his potent singular attacks relying not on repetition or sinister after effects. The single overwhelming attack was as dangerous to her as she was to Jason, which is why Humphrey was kicking her corpse off his sword just moments into the fight. The Archbishop snarled in rage, throwing out a hand that blasted Humphrey, even enlarged by Neil's spell, tumbling back. Jason, forgotten in the wake of Humphrey's attention-grabbing assault, had positioned himself to strike at the distracted Archbishop. Despite his rage, however, Hendren's reflexes were quick, and he hadn't abandoned his attentiveness when surrounded by enemies. Jason's dagger barely drew blood, while the backhand retaliation was far more powerful. Neil was once again on the ball, a shield appearing around Jason to negate the attack, buying Jason the moment he needed to back off. Timos, through all this, read the situation and reacted immediately, in the exact opposite way to the Archbishop. Rather than lunge into the attack, he activated two separate movement powers in quick succession as he fled, followed by a chameleon power that made his departing form hard to spot. Jason quickly cast a spell in his direction as a parting shot. Ability, castigate, sin, spell, curse, holy, tracking, cost, moderate mana, cooldown, none, current rank, bronze, 4, 06%. Effect, iron. Burns a painful brand into the target, inflicting slight transcendent damage and the sin and mark of sin conditions. The brand cannot be healed so long as the target retains any instances of sin. Effect, bronze. Inflicts or refreshes the duration, weight of sin. You gain the Marshal of Judgment boon.
sin, affliction, curse, stacking. All necrotic damage taken is increased. Additional instances have a cumulative effect. Mark of sin, affliction, holy, prevents aura retraction, cannot be cleansed while target retains any instances of sin or legacy of sin. Weight of sin, affliction, holy, target suffers transcendent damage when subjected to a holy boon, recovery, healing, or cleansing effect. Marshal of judgment, boon, tracking, holy, know the distance and direction of anyone bearing a mark of sin placed by you. This effect lasts as long as the mark is still in place and cannot be negated.
Unless Timos had an ability like Jason's to escape tracking effects, Jason would know where Timos was, roughly, until the cultist found a way to remove the afflictions. Most of Jason's afflictions had a lengthy duration, but sin would never drop off until it was cleansed, meaning that Mark of Sin and Marshal of Judgment would likewise remain in effect perpetually. Timos showed no intention of doubling back, however, as Jason sensed him moving directly away from them at speed. Jason and his team had seized the initiative with their powerful opening gambit, taking a dangerous enemy off the board. No fight against a silver rank essence user could be that simple, however. Even alone, the threat Hendren represented was only marginally diminished by the loss of his bronze rank companions. He had always been the true danger. The team had also gone through a number of their more powerful abilities with their opening moves. Having them on cooldown and not immediately available again moved the momentum in Hendren's favour. He had used his near-indestructible dome ability, but was otherwise fully loaded with powers. The furious Archbishop conjured a staff into his hands, a wooden staff covered in runes. As Sophie moved in before he went after one of her less resilient team members, he demonstrated that he was fully capable of using it to the full extent. He unleashed a dizzying array of spinning attacks, Sophie wildly moving to intercept them with her arms, legs, and fists. The air was full of dust from the freshly demolished building, aside from the bubble of clean air created by Sophie's aura. The rubble underfoot made for unsteady footing, but neither Sophie nor the Archbishop seemed troubled, dancing around one another as if they were on solid ground. Humphrey could not match the feat, so he waited the few seconds for his leap attack to become available before once more hurling himself into the fray. While it wasn't his unstoppable force attack, it was still startling to see the power of two of Humphrey's special attacks completely arrested by nothing more than an ordinary staff block. The silver ranker did not even stagger as his staff continued to spin dangerously, pursuing both Sophie and Humphrey together. Hendren was close to an exact rank above the bulk of the team, in the low to mid-range of silver. He had no abilities that enhanced his speed or strength, but his silver rank attribute still made him faster than Sophie and stronger than Humphrey. The margins weren't so large, but embodied in a single person, the result was easily the most formidable foe the team had ever encountered. Hendren's martial skills, while highly trained, were not the match of Humphrey or Sophie, but more on the level of Jason. They were still more than dangerous when combined with his silver rank strength and speed and a barrage of special attacks. As a human, the Archbishop had plenty of special attacks available. They mostly seemed to be of the moderate power, short cooldown variety, which allowed him to chain them into well-practiced sequences. He could extend the length of his staff, create a storm of illusionary jabs that still inflicted damage, or seamlessly integrate magical blasts from his staff, even while using it as a melee weapon. As he executed attack after attack, hammering at Sophie and Humphrey, he was also able to adroitly navigate the uncertain footing. While Hendren was no match for Daniel Geller or Thalia Mercer, he still towered above the kind of trashy silver ranker that languished in Greenstone instead of seeking greater heights in the wider world. If Sophie and Humphrey were all he had to deal with, he would have finished the fight already. Humphrey and Neil both had their summons ready nearby and had called them in once the fighting started. Despite the continually worsening odds, the Archbishop continued to fight off all comers with what looked like disheartening ease. Clive's staff blasts were much less effective than normal, as Hendren had the same crystallized mana power as Neil, Humphrey, and Clive himself. The extremely common power, at silver rank, left five crystals floating around Hendren that not only intercepted magical projectiles, but reflected them back. This sent Clive's staff blasts back in his own direction, where his own three crystals absorbed the attacks. Clive fought cross-legged on the back of Onslow, the floating tortoise offering him some easy manoeuvrability on the rough terrain of the ruined building. He didn't have Onslow use his powers, which were better for picking off small fry. Belinda didn't even bother with weapons, concentrating on the support role. Her echo spirit familiar was helping Humphrey make illusionary duplicate attacks, which partially compensated for his speed deficit against the Archbishop, as well as his lesser ability to navigate the dangerously unstable footing. The force bolts of lantern familiar, Shimmer, proved more dangerous to her than the enemy, given Hendren's defences. She could have used it to help Clive overwhelm those defences to get his staff blasts through, but the reflected damage was an extra threat they couldn't afford. Instead, she used it to project shields to protect her and Clive from the occasional blast of Hendren's own staff sent in their direction. That left Neil free to concentrate on keeping Sophie and Humphrey in fighting shape. Stash had shifted form again and taken the shape of a needle scorpion, with tough armor and the ability to shoot spines from its tail at a distance. Gordon was also attacking from a distance with beams. In spite of the ranged attackers, it was Sophie and Humphrey that held the Archbishop's attention the most. Ultimately, their bronze rank power could not inflict any critical wounds against his incredible silver rank resilience. Only Humphrey had proven a genuine threat, with his powerful attacks and ability to ignore the resistance Hendren otherwise enjoyed against lower-ranked attacks. The threat of Humphrey and the mobility of Sophie were the only things preventing Hendren from running rampant over the battlefield. Sophie's attacks, while only minimal in damage, did punch through the Silver Ranker's defences. It was her physical intervention that was the greater impediment, however. Just through positioning, she was constantly setting up Humphrey to make attacks, heightening the threat he posed. Defending against an overhead blow from Hendren's staff drove Humphrey to one knee, despite getting his sword up in time to block it. Hendren followed up with a kick to the chest that sent Humphrey tumbling back, although he didn't go far across the rubble. Sophie could almost match his speed and could certainly match his skill. Her damage was limited, however, and her special abilities were being countered. Hendren was an experienced fighter, and it showed. He seemed to know which abilities he could ignore, which required blocking, and which required an active counter from an ability of his own. When Sophie tried to blast him off his feet with her wind power, for example, he planted his staff and used an immovability power. Sophie's ability then did nothing more than ruffle the priest's combat robes. Humphrey and the Archbishop met weapon to weapon, dodging attacks and hitting back hard. Hendren made full use of his superior speed to force openings and follow up with special attacks. Even with his potent armor, it was only the steady stream of shields and healing from Neil that kept Humphrey in the fight. Jason was keeping Colin inside him, concerned that the Priest of Purity may well have an answer to Colin's swarm state. If the Silver Ranker had some kind of area power, it could rapidly pulverize the leeches, so Jason kept Colin at the ready, though not yet deployed. Once more, the priest's bigger powers had been teased out and put on cooldown. He had Colin for a trump card if necessary. At the moment, he was more interested in the extra healing that Colin would provide him. Jason was acutely aware of how dangerous the enemy was. He was not as resilient as Humphrey and Sophie. One good hit from a silver rank special attack could kill him outright. His normal methods of sneaking around, using Shade's bodies to stage blindside attacks, would be far less effective against Silver Rank sensors. His only margin for error was however much he could stack up the protective power of his amulet by laying on afflictions, but there was only so many he could land with spells alone. A scroll of system messages reflected the stark reality of fighting a purity priest using afflictions. Umbral snake venom has been cleansed from Nicholas Hendren. Necrotoxin has been cleansed from Nicholas Hendren. Leech toxin has been cleansed from Nicholas Hendren. Hendren constantly and passively cleansed himself, meaning that Jason would need to bring his dagger into play to overwhelm that power, unless he could get a good base of afflictions that his inexorable doom spell could then build upon. Hendren's cleansing power would wipe even that spell away. He was hesitant about jumping into the fray. Even with the reach of his shadow arms, the danger the Archbishop posed was a daunting proposition. The only bright spot was that the one hit Jason had landed early was the Punish special attack. It had delivered the Price of Absolution ability, which Hendren's ability was apparently unable to cleanse. The effect itself was minor, inflicting a small amount of transcendent damage whenever a sin affliction was cleansed from the target. The damage was negligible to the silver ranker, but the important part was that the affliction stuck. It indicated that Hendren's cleansing powers might not be able to remove holy afflictions. While Jason was being largely ineffectual, Clive charged up and unleashed his most powerful spell, Wrath of the Magister. It was further boosted by Neil's bolster spell, which enhanced a single ability use. Clive was confident that it had the potency to really hurt even a silver ranker. Clive unleashed the spell, and the rainbow light poured from his hands. But Hendren held up his own hand in a stopping motion, and a magic circle appeared in the air in front of it. The rainbow light of Clive's spell deflected off the magical shield, Hendren redirecting it at Humphrey instead. Clive couldn't abort the spell without suffering a backlash he definitely wouldn't survive. He was forced to go through with it. But the rest of the team did not let him down. Their hard-won experience shone through as they reacted instantly to the unexpected reversal. Jason's shadow hand snaked out and slapped Humphrey on the back, passing over all the charges he had accumulated on his amulet. Neil threw up a shield, and a second wall-like shield appeared between Humphrey and the spell, courtesy of Belinda's familiar. Despite the best protection they could offer, Clive's power created a void in Humphrey's chest. The shields siphoned off enough power that the void was smaller than normal, but still ripped a hole in Humphrey's armor and torso that would have killed an iron ranker outright. Even a sturdy bronze ranker like Humphrey collapsed immediately to the ground, hovering on the brink of death. The pressure was suddenly off Hendren, but instead of pressing Sophie or the team, he took the chance to start dismantling the mess of summons that had been hounding him. The dragon tooth warriors were battered apart in short order, and he went to work on the golem, which was swiftly pushed into its chrysalis state. As much as she wanted to protect that source of pressure on Hendren, Sophie stood by as he tore through their support. She was not going to give him an opening to finish the job on the stricken Humphrey until her teammate was back on his feet. Hendren threw her a sneer, fully aware of her intentions. After demolishing the summons, he used the freedom of not being attacked to cast a spell. A large mass of disruptive force blasted at Gordon, massively damaging the incorporeal entity. The floating cloak of its body tore like tissue paper, and Jason immediately drew his familiar back into himself. In a move that left the team in shock, Hendren then demonstrated that not every special attack at his command was a low cooldown power with commensurately moderate damage. He raised up his staff, and the runes etched into it started to glow brightly. He hammered the end down on the chrysalis state of the golem, which, to date, had proven impervious to any form of attack. Not only was it damaged from the blow, but cracks spread throughout, glowing with the same light as the runes on the staff. The glow grew brighter, and the cracks kept spreading, until the chrysalis and the golem inside exploded, raining crystal over the battlefield before dissolving into stinking rainbow smoke. Chapter 59 Forsaken Place. Humphrey lay on the ground, barely conscious, his life spilling from the savage wound in his chest. The rest of the team's circumstances were not much more promising, with the summons destroyed and the seemingly indestructible enemy too dangerous to even approach. Jason's afflictions, the means by which they had overcome so many strong enemies, were falling off as fast as he could put them on, even the ones being applied retributively by Jason's aura. The team's most powerful magic attack had been turned on them, leaving them in the precarious position they now found themselves. Hendren had seized the chance to alleviate the pressure on him by destroying the summons and sending Jason's familiar into a state not much better than what Humphrey was in. The only blessing was the brief reprieve the team received in turn, as the Silver Ranker's attacks were not aimed at them. Neil, not needing to be primed to throw a shield out at zero notice, had time to cast his big, long cooldown healing spell. Fountain of Renewal combined powerful healing and mana recovery effects that covered the whole team at the cost of a cooldown measured in hours. Despite that potency, however, the spell did not save Humphrey's life. That was accomplished by a power of Humphrey's own. Ability, immortality, might, special ability, healing, recovery. Cost, none. Cooldown, 24 hours. Current rank, bronze, 3, 16%. Effect, iron. Instantly restore a large portion of health, mana, and stamina,
Amount restored is based on how depleted health, mana, and stamina are when the ability is activated. Effect, bronze. Gain ongoing health, mana, and stamina recovery effects. The strength of these effects is based on how depleted health, mana, and stamina are when the ability is activated.
It was the power Humphrey had gotten from the legendary Awakening Stone of Rebirth, his share of the reward from Emiya for success in their first journey to the astral space. The effects were miraculous, healing light blazing from under Humphrey's skin, all through his body. At iron rank, the light would fade after the initial healing, but at bronze rank, the light merely dimmed. Humphrey pushed himself to his feet, the crater in his chest reduced to a gaping wound. The wound continued to heal from the potent healing effects stacked on Humphrey, the lingering effect of his immortality power, and the effect of Neil's spell. Fountain of Renewal actually conjured a fountain in the air, spraying illusory water that carried very real rejuvenating power. There was also the effect of the amulet shield that Jason had passed over. When consumed, the instances of protection became an ongoing healing effect. Humphrey reconjured his armor that had a large hole in the front, and the sword which had vanished when he dropped it as he fell. Humphrey then went after Hendren like a man possessed. It was not fury. His mother had trained him too long and too hard for him to let rage take over. It was a controlled intensity, driven by his passion, but not consumed by it. Every bit of strength and skill Humphrey could muster, he unloaded onto the Archbishop, who was startled to find himself pushed back by an enemy he had thought finished. Hendren had dealt with most of the summons, yet to him, it was as if his foes had doubled in number, not halved. Jason took the chance to get in some sneaky hits, Hendren letting them go as he withstood Humphrey's barrage. With no immediate harm, Hendren trusted his ongoing cleansing powers to continue handling the afflictions. Jason was happy for him to think that, finally having enough of an affliction buffer to lock in some spells that would stick. Humphrey's resurgence was a powerful swing in the fight, but it could not solve the ultimate issue, that they could not land definitive damage on their opponent. Humphrey's surge could not last forever, and inexorably, the Archbishop retook the momentum. Without the summons at his back, Hendren was better able to focus on Sophie and Humphrey, battering them such that Neil's shields and healing, even with Belinda's support, were being slowly yet inevitably overtaken. If not for the overlapping mana recovery effects the team enjoyed, Neil's contribution would have already run out. The team still managed to hold on. Hendren realized that even though he had pushed back the assault of Humphrey, the thief girl, Wexler, was becoming harder and harder to deal with. A traditional guardian type was most effective against a multitude of lesser attackers, whose myriad strikes couldn't breach their defenses. She thrived against a single attacker, evading powerful attacks that a traditional defense-focused adventurer could not endure. Hendren had found her hard to deal with from the start, always exactly where he didn't want her to be. Even though he was faster than her, she knew how to make better use of her speed, which left him feeling slower. He could only periodically land hits with the aid of his special attacks, and even then she had some ability that accumulated defensive power over time and expended it in protective force when she was finally hit. Without the additional trouble of the summons, he had been free to make several attempts to focus her down, but every time he did, she became even more elusive. She would suddenly speed up, his magical senses detecting space itself warping as her reflexes briefly eclipsed his own. Even some of his special attacks had fallen short. He had tried to pin her down with an attack that duplicated his staff and attacked multiple times, faster than he, even with his silver rank perception, could follow. She had turned into a blur that impossibly dodged or blocked every attack. Now, when he felt he should be pushing the enemy past the point of resistance, she was harder to deal with than ever. Her attacks were growing stronger, not just the impact, but the magical damage that came with every strike. His own attacks were harming her less and less, while attacking anyone but her triggered retribution damage that passed right through his defenses. For Sophie's part, she had never felt more powerful. Never had they encountered an enemy that could hold up so imperviously to everything the team could throw at him. The result was that an ability that had limited impact on fights in the past became increasingly important. Ability, Karmic Warrior, Balance, Special Ability, Healing, Recovery, Cost, None, Cooldown, None, Current Rank, Bronze, 3, 20%, Effect, Iron, Gain an instance of
agent of karma, when subjected to damage or any harmful effect, even if the damage and or effect was wholly negated. Effect, bronze, gain an instance of good karma when healing others, cleansing others, or suffering damage. Enemies that attack or take offensive actions against you are inflicted with bad karma. So long as any enemy has an instance of bad karma, you have karmic sacrifice. Agent of karma, boon, holy, bonus to the power and spirit attributes. Additional instances have a cumulative effect. Bad karma, affliction, retributive, holy. Suffer a small amount of retributive transcendent damage when making an attack or other offensive action against anyone without the karmic sacrifice boon. Additional instances have a cumulative effect. Good karma, boon, holy, stacking. Bonus to recovery. Damage from enemies with bad karma is reduced. Additional instances have a cumulative effect. Karmic sacrifice. Boon, holy, heal over time. Gain an ongoing healing effect with strength determined by the amount of good karma you have accrued. This effect immediately ends if there are no enemies suffering from bad karma. Every attack that landed made her all the stronger. She eventually realized that the Archbishop had caught onto this and was no longer trying to finish her off with special attacks, simply trying to manage her as he went harder at Humphrey. Hendren's perception power let him sense the boons and afflictions, so he sensed the holy power gathering on the thief girl each time he landed a hit. Frustratingly, his ongoing cleansing powers could not eliminate holy effects. He only had one power that could, but he was saving it for when Asano made his inevitable move. The thief girl was moving from a nuisance to a powerhouse, but it was still within the realm of bronze rank. She was not yet enough of a problem that Hendren had to take drastic action. For all that her damage was increasing, plus the retribution damage that went right through his defenses, it was not yet on a scale that threatened his silver rank fortitude. His ongoing health recovery was still enough to compensate, which meant that, for the moment, he could afford to leave her be. Hendren had been paying attention to Asano throughout the fight, despite the affliction specialist accomplishing no more than a few futile spells, with the afflictions quickly falling away. During Humphrey's push, Asano had managed to get a few afflictions in place with melee attacks, using those stretching shadow arms to attack from relative safety. As the fight progressed, however, it became clear to Hendren that the afflictions Asano had put in place were multiplying themselves faster than his passive ability was clearing them off. He realized that Asano and Sophie were the primary threats, the type that never tired and grew stronger and stronger the longer a fight went on. Hendren felt the magic in the afflictions on himself activate when Asano used a spell, sending the death energy through his body and rotting at his flesh. Hendren knew then that it was time to reset the board and put paid to the power Asano and the thief girl were building up. The team was blasted back as Hendren used a new special attack. He set his staff floating in the air in front of his outstretched palm, spinning in a rapid blur and blasting out wind akin to Sophie's wind wave power. It inflicted no damage, but knocked the whole team back as Hendren swept his arms around, the windmilling staff moving with it. Only the heavy Onslow was unmoved. He turned a slow, disgruntled head around as Clive tumbled off his shell. Hendren used the moment he bought to cast a spell, holding an arm up where a sphere of clean white light started shining. It erupted out in a blinding flash, washing over everyone. For a short but critical moment, the team were unable to see.
"You think afflictions can take down a priest of purity?"
Hendren called out as the team recovered. "All of your afflictions on Nicholas Hendren have been cleansed by an effect that ignores all cleanse prevention. All of your boons and the boons on your items have been negated by an effect that ignores dispel prevention." The dazzle faded, and the team's vision returned to find that Hendren had made a move on Neil while the team couldn't see. This had been trumped by Belinda, who had anticipated Hendren making a big move, casting her own spell as he had cast his. Ability, unexpected allies, charlatan, special ability, dimension, teleport, illusion, cost, very high mana, cooldown, 10 minutes, current rank,
Bronze, 1, 67%. Effect, iron. You and your allies take on the illusionary form of nearby enemies, but your allies can still recognize one another. All allies and enemies in the area are randomly switch teleported. Effect, bronze. Create illusions of your allies. Hendren had seen a lot of powers in his career, but Belinda's unusual suite of abilities was filled with rarities. In addition to being a delight to Clive's academic curiosity, it let her affect battles in ways their enemies didn't anticipate. Every member of the team had been altered by illusion to look exactly like Hendren himself, while illusionary doubles of the team had been brought into being, then switch-teleported with the real thing. Hendren's attack when the team was blinded killed off nothing but an illusion. The team was out of formation, scattered randomly by Belinda's power. It left them all out of position, but Hendren had no way of telling one team member from another until they acted and broke the illusion. Unsurprisingly, this started with Sophie and Humphrey, who lunged at Hendren. Closer than either of them, one of the illusionary archbishops chanted out one of Neil's healing spells, and Hendren made a rushing attack to interrupt. Neil avoided the attack by vanishing into his own shadow, appearing nearby and slashing at the archbishop with a dagger held in a shadow arm as a cloak of stars appeared around him. He disappeared into another of Shade's bodies right before Hendren annihilated it with a staff attack shrouded in disruptive force. Sophie and Humphrey were on Hendren then, as Jason fired off spells as quickly as he could coherently chant the incantations. As he did, he received a warning from Shade, who still had two bodies positioned between their current location and the builder's walled fort.
"Shade just told me reinforcements are on the way," Jason told the others through voice chat. "We have to get this done, so I'm going aggressive. Neil, I'm going to need those shields. Belinda, help him keep them coming, because I'm going to need it. First, though, I'm going to need the good stuff."
"Are you sure?" Neil asked.
"I don't have time not to be," Jason said.
"All right," Neil said. "Here goes." Neil chanted a spell, and Jason felt a power flood through him like a supercharged spirit coin. Ability, hero's moment, growth, spell, boon, holy, recovery, cost, extreme mana, cooldown, 24 hours, current rank, bronze, 2, 87%, effect, iron. Bestow a powerful boon on an ally, increasing all attributes and resistances by a significant amount. They receive damage reduction, their maximum mana and stamina are increased, and they gain ongoing mana and stamina recovery. They ignore the effects of rank disparity. When this effect ends, they are temporarily debilitated, suffering the inverse of all previous effects. Effect, bronze. Affected allies' essence abilities have increased effect.
Neil then used his bolster spell, which Jason used to conjure a new and more powerful dagger. The bolstered version would make the afflictions it bestowed more potent than normal. Hendren's silver rank sensors allowed him to pay attention to the whole field of battle. He had figured out which of his enemies was which, and which were illusions. He spotted the healer throwing spells on Asano and knew a push was coming. It galled him that bronze rankers had driven him this hard. He needed to put an end to proceedings. He made another dash at the healer, but it was a feint. He immediately stopped and used a special attack on the empty space in front of him. The thief girl fell for the bait, moving into place right as the attack activated. Light shone up from the ground, trapping her in place. It would normally only hold someone for a short moment, but a silver rank power on a bronze rank enemy gave him more time to spare. He turned on Humphrey, who was charging into support. Hendren again used his spinning staff wind blast to send Humphrey flying. He turned back to the thief girl, who had discovered that movement powers were suppressed in the silver rank trapping field. He raised up his staff, the runes glowing brightly, the way it had when he shattered the golem chrysalis into fragments. He brought it down on the thief girl as the light field faded away. Sophie caught the descending staff in one hand. The archbishop was left in disbelieving shock. She gave him a savage grin as she slapped a palm right into his chest. Red light glowed under her hand, the same light that had spread through the golem and destroyed it.
The light spread through the Archbishop's chest and then exploded, leaving him with a wound much like Clive had left on Humphrey. Hendren was a silver ranker, however, not a bronze. His body was closer to the amorphous flesh Clive had once described to the team, and his fortitude was far higher. Even with a gaping cavity where a normal person's heart and a good chunk of their lungs would be, Hendren little more than paused before resuming the fight with Sophie. He hadn't even dropped his staff. His body started glowing with internal light as he activated a powerful self-healing ability. Humphrey arrived back to press the fight once more. Jason also joined the melee, with both himself and his dagger rippling with power. He was faster, stronger, and tougher than ever before. Around him were three of Shade's bodies, all that were still present. Of the seven total bodies, two were still off scouting, one had self-destructed in the enemy camp, and one had been destroyed by Hendren. Jason had a very different form of aggression to Humphrey or Sophie. In the early days of his training, he had naive ideas about being the perfect counter-striker, deceptive and cunning. As his understanding of fighting developed and he gained new powers, he had gained a better understanding of what was possible and what worked best for him. He had kept the deceptive and manipulative parts, using his cloak, his shadow arms, and the bodies of Shade to play with perception and distance, toying with his enemies. He even used aura manipulation to project false positions. The goal was to provide opportunities that, for other fighters, were worthless. When all he needed was the merest wound, his idea of a successful attack was, to other fighters, a failed strike. It was an unusual margin for success that allowed him to use trickery that for most fighters would be wasteful play-acting. Jason used every trick in his repertoire against the Silver Rank Priest. Even empowered by Neil's incredible spell, he was not the equal in speed or strength of the Archbishop. He did prove, however, that he was a match in skill after all. Again and again, Jason made nothing but a grazing slash, but that was all he was after. His empowered dagger revealed the lack of protectiveness Hendren's combat robe suffered in return for flexibility and lightness. As someone who used such robes himself, this weakness was something Jason was very much aware of. He used that knowledge to know how far he had to push. All the while, Sophie and Humphrey pushed the Archbishop as well. That was not to say that Hendren did not hammer blows on all three in return, especially focusing on Jason. For a short while, though, Neil was assisted by Belinda in burning through cooldowns to repeat shields on Jason. His affliction, stacking up, also quickly added stacks to his amulet. Even piling on, however, they could not outlast a silver rank essence user. Hendren continued relentlessly, the healing light closing the wound on his chest, even as the others flagged. Jason took a couple of big hits, hurting him even through the layers of protection.
"It's time for the second coming of Humphrey," Jason said through voice chat.
In response, Belinda cast a spell on Neil. Ability: Blessing of Relentlessness, Adept. Spell: Boon, Magic, Recovery. Cost: Extreme Mana. Cooldown: 24 hours. Current rank: Bronze, 2, 94%. Effect: Iron. Reset all cooldowns of a single ally of bronze rank or below. Effect: Bronze. Affected ally gains a powerful, ongoing mana and stamina recovery effect. It was the big sister to her ability to reset one affliction, giving one ally a once-per-day full power reset. The advantage of letting someone with their own once-per-day power use it back-to-back was obvious. Neil repeated his hero's moment spell, this time on Humphrey. As when he had recovered from Clive's spell, Humphrey pushed hard into Hendren, surging forward in an aggressive attack. Neil's potent boon, normally usable only once per day, raised his strength to a level even above his silver rank opponent. Neil followed up with his giant's might spell for good measure, turning Humphrey into a towering hulk that could, for the brief while the spells lasted, overpower his enemy with pure strength. With both Jason and Humphrey under the effect of the spell, though, there was a danger looming at the end of the spell's duration. Neil's hero moment spell was a Cinderella magic trick, and when it wore off, Jason and Humphrey would turn back into pumpkins. The spell's end would bring with it debilitating effects as potent as the boosts the pair currently enjoyed. Jason went wild with his dagger, piling on afflictions, before leaving Humphrey to bundle up the priest while Jason backed off to cast spells.
He locked in his full affliction sequence under a heavy block of dagger-inflicted maledictions, then cast Punition, which inflicted damage for every affliction he was suffering. Finally, the familiar traces of black rot from Jason's power became visible on the enemy. Hendren slammed his staff into the ground, sending out a blast wave that knocked even the giant-empowered Humphrey away, let alone the rest of the team. Further, he left the staff standing vertically in place, blasting out force waves that continued pushing them away. Unaffected himself, Hendren started chanting out a spell. A bolt of dark blue magic erupted from Belinda's outstretched hand. She was still lying on the ground where the wave of force had sent her falling. Her magic ignored the pulsing waves of force and struck Hendren mid-incantation. Belinda's aura was flush with the power of the silver rank spirit coin she had just taken to make sure her attack was not resisted. Ability, power thief, magic, special attack, boon, affliction, magic, cost, very high mana, cooldown, 5 minutes, current rank, bronze, 3, 21%. Effect, iron, make a magical ranged attack. You become able to use a random, active-use ability of the target, who cannot use that ability until you have done so. It can be an essence ability or the inherent ability of a magic creature, but functions at your rank, not the rank of the target. You may not use the ability more than once. This ability cannot be used again until the copied ability is used. If not used within 24 hours, the copied ability is lost, restoring the target's ability to use it. Effect. Bronze. You can choose a specific ability of the target. If the target does not have that ability, a random ability is stolen instead. One thing that Belinda had learned about this particular power was that when choosing a specific ability, she wasn't restricted to just designating abilities she knew the target possessed. She was able to designate as the targeted ability one that the enemy was in the process of using. Her instant-use special attack was faster than the somewhat lengthy spell Hendren had bought the time to cast with his Force Wave power, and his spell was cut off as she stole it for herself. She collapsed as the power of the spirit coin drained out of her. She would be able to make no more contribution to the fight, while Jason and Humphrey were close to being the same. They could both feel Neil's spell reaching the limit of its duration, while they were still held back by the waves emitting from the staff.
"You think that's enough?"
Hendren screamed wildly, spitting mania.
"You think it can ever be enough? There is no stain that true purity cannot burn out!"
Hendren started casting yet another cleansing spell, but Jason used one that was faster.
"Feed me your sins."
The priest's life force became visible, filled with a distressing amount of taint for a priest of purity. Jason's Feast of Absolution spell took it all. Jason's passive sin-eater power gave him an immediate burst of mana and stamina, along with a pile of the integrity boon, granting ongoing health, stamina, and mana recovery. More importantly, Feast of Absolution left, in the wake of the dark and sinister afflictions, the transcendent light of holy afflictions. They filled up his life force, then lit up Hendren from the inside, when his life force once again retracted out of sight. Hendren fought through the pain and finished his own cleansing spell, which, to his shock, did nothing.
"Holy?"
he asked as he dropped to one knee.
"How can it be holy? How can you, of all people?"
It was as if the shock of being ravaged by holy afflictions was more debilitating than the ravaging itself. Hendren dropped completely to his knees, throwing back his head. He did not even seem to notice the transcendent damage burning him from the inside out.
"Lord!"
he cried to the sky.
"Why can you not speak to me in this forsaken place? Why did you send me here?"
"In case you hadn't noticed," Jason called out to him, "your lord is a bit of a prick." He chanted out his spell to finish the job.
"Mine is the judgment, and the judgment is death."
Hendren didn't acknowledge Jason or his words, dissolving into nothing under transcendent light, face still gazing at the sky. Chapter 60. being what he needs to be.